listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, everyone. This is author Cal Wilson, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. I wanted to devote this episode specifically to the brand new gun buyer, that person who until just recently might have been anti-gun or ambivalent about guns. And over time, they've decided, I've changed my mind. I'd like to have a handgun or maybe a rifle or whatever in my possession at home or at work or in the car or whatever so that I can protect myself. So this episode is to give advice to that person. In other words, where to start? You know, a lot of people make that decision. They don't even know where to go. So I wanted to give some advice to specifically that kind of person. Later on in this episode, I'll have as a guest my good friend Bob Main of the Handgun World podcast. I say he's a good friend. I can't say I've ever met him in person, but we've had a very good online relationship, and I hope someday to meet him in person. He's a good guy. Like I said, he has the Handgun World podcast, which is a great podcast, not only for gun advice, but also there are just a whole ton of resources that you'll be made aware of if you listen to his podcast. In fact, there's a whole world out there of gun podcasts of different angles. You know, should you buy this gun? There's some podcasts where they like different brands of guns better than others. There's some that like carbines or rifles or what's the best way to go to a shooting range? What are the best latest sales that are going on? That kind of thing. There's a whole ton of information out there. And by listening to the Handgun World podcast, you avail yourself of all that information out there, all those resources. So anyway, we'll have him as a guest later on. First, I want to tell my story, how I came to become an owner of guns and a pro Second Amendment person. I want to say that I grew up in a family that was Democratic with a large D. Not that we ever discussed the specifics of politics, but we just fell into the stereotype that Democrats, just as a rule, Democrats are friendly and easygoing people and charitable and just nice people, whereas Republicans are just real stingy, tightwads, and generally just kind of rude people. And like I said, we never really talked about the specifics of the politics involved. When I was in college, that's where I made the changeover. I realized the mistake of my earlier thinking and became a Republican in college. And there still were a couple of specific issues that still hung around in my mind. I was still so-called pro-choice. I've since changed my mind on that. And at the time in college, even though I became a Republican, I was still either hostile to guns or just almost ambivalent about guns. But I was never pro-gun in college. And I still believed in the stereotype that it's unsafe to have a gun around. If somebody broke into your house and you pulled out a gun to defend yourself, the bad guy would just grab the gun and use it against you. So that was still my belief about guns, that they were just unsafe to have around. Right around that time, I met my brother-in-law, who was a very serious gun guy. And I remember talking to him in his house once, and there might have been a lull in the conversation, and he just reached between his couch cushions and pulled out a revolver. And I made a few jokes, and that was kind of how it was between me and him, that I would make kind of jokes or not really hostile barbs, but just kind of comments here or there. And as a new attorney after law school, I would drive into work every day and I would drive by an indoor shooting range, and I didn't think much of it. Then in 1993 came the shooting at the Pettit & Martin law firm in San Francisco. And let me back up for a second. I'd always believed that the most unsafe areas of the law to be engaged in were family law, like divorces and child custody stuff. I firmly believed this notion that those are the lawyers who get shot. And if you could just stay away from that subject matter of the practice of law and just do something else, well, then you'll be safe. My car, for example, I made the mistake of parking it outside of a family courthouse one day back in that time frame. And there was a shootout and my car almost got shot. And I thought, yeah, well, that makes sense because that courthouse is, they deal with family law there. All right. So in 1993, the law firm of Pettit & Martin over in San Francisco got shot up. Now, Pettit & Martin, as a subject matter, they handled civil law. They issued opinions on insurance coverage. They did product liability defense. They did zoning variance petitions, and they did some municipal court bonds. We'll see. Yeah, I guess I fell asleep. I fell asleep describing what Pettit Martin did as a law firm. But suffice it to say that the stuff that they did as a law firm had no appeal to me at all. It was the epitome of boring stuff for a young lawyer. So I stayed clear of Pettit Martin when they came through my law school recruiting, and the stuff they did was boring. When their law firm got shot up that summer, it occurred to me that nobody's safe. There's no law firm anywhere that is safe from being shot up. And I think the guy who shot up Pettit Martin had some kind of investment thing that went south. And I think like 8 years earlier, he had tried to hire Pettit Martin. And that's what a lot of investment companies do. They try to hire a blue chip law firm so that they can send their investment brochures and everything out to people. And the prospective investors would see, oh, look, they've got this real serious law firm working for them. And same for this accounting firm, you know, PricewaterhouseCoopers, whatever. So I think what happened was this entrepreneur guy had tried to hire Pettit Martin. Pettit Martin said, no, we don't do that kind of whatever. And so 8 years later, his investment thing failed. And I guess he blamed Pettit Martin. So he went up to the law offices of Pettit Martin and put on his ear protection first and then just walked down the hallway shooting everybody he could at the Pettit Martin law firm in San Francisco. Okay. The thing is, I had heard that people in that shooting died while hiding under tables and under desks. And maybe it's just because I grew up watching a lot of Western movies or something, but I just thought, there's no way that will ever happen to me. If I'm ever shot in an office situation, it's going to be while I'm in the process of trying to shoot back. I'm not going to hide under a desk somewhere. So almost immediately when I heard about this law firm, Pettit & Martin, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 of exciting work, they were probably a half, you know? We're talking narcoleptic level of work there. So I figured right then and there, if that law firm can get shot up, anybody can. So that's when I immediately became a pro-gun person and wanted to have my own gun in my office, at home, and in the car, and so forth. So the only experience I had had with guns was shooting .22 rifles in summer camp. So I knew a little bit about guns. I called up my brother-in-law to pick his brain, and he had a big laugh. Oh, sure. And I said, go ahead and laugh. I deserve it. Okay. So it took a little while for him to calm down after laughing. And then he was really cool. He let me totally pick his brain about guns. And I had a whole lot of questions. And then I had follow-up questions too. He was great for that too. Then I just walked into this indoor gun range that I had driven by so many times before. And I asked that guy behind the counter there a lot of questions too. And as it turns out, they rented a whole bunch of different handguns. They would sell you the ammo. They would rent the earmuffs and so forth. So, you know, within like a couple of weeks, I found myself at a shooting range. I was renting guns, buying ammo, and shooting at targets at the shooting range. Eventually, I got to prefer 40 caliber or 9 millimeter, that type of bullet. And I did like the brands Sig Sauer, Glock, and Beretta, and Ruger too. I eventually bought a Glock Model 22. It's a 40 caliber. And also I bought a locking case because as an attorney, I knew that if somebody were to steal my gun or if some kid were to get into my gun, like in the chest of drawers or something, there was a lot of unsafety if it's not locked up, not to mention liability issues too. I could get sued or prosecuted or whatever. And I think that's always a good idea. Whenever you buy a gun, it's a good idea to buy a container to lock it in. And nowadays they have biometric locking cases. So you can lock your gun up, say at home under your bed or something. But if you really need it, you can just put your hand on top of that locked box and the box will notice your fingerprints and then unlock and then you've got your gun ready to go. That's what I would recommend. In the last 20, 25 years, I have bought several handguns. I have a shotgun, which is Winchester. It kicks like a mule. So someday I'm going to buy a Benelli, which has a very little kickback. I own several handguns, including Beretta, Smith & Wesson, Shield 9mm. I'm gravitating towards 9mm because I've noticed that whenever there's a run on ammo, it seems like 9mm, there's always a lot of 9mm available. I'm slowly building an AR-15. The wife and I have some property out in the country where it's legal to shoot just out in the open. So on occasion, I do invite friends out and we have a shooting morning. We shoot at a certain hill. We call it Lead Hill. And we bring targets, we shoot at 5-gallon buckets, we shoot at 2x4s up there on the hill, we shoot at cans of shaving cream. That's pretty fun. I have a CCW permit right now, and I carry as much as I can. Unfortunately, I'm in government buildings a lot, so I cannot carry in that building. I do carry in restaurants where it's okay and department stores where it's okay. Nobody ever knows that I have a gun on me, hence the term concealed. I'm also a member of USCCA. And if you do become a permit holder of a CCW permit, I would definitely recommend USCCA membership. I have in my wallet with me right now an information card. And it has information on it in case I'm ever involved in a shooting where I pull a gun. In other words, it's defensive. Then what do I do next? And that information I know helps. And it has a phone number I can call and get legal advice from an attorney who does nothing but stuff like this. So I would definitely recommend membership in USCCA. Anyway, like I said, we're going to have as a guest Bob Main from Handgun World Podcast. So stay tuned.
It's time to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Bud's Gun Shop and Range has the largest selection, the biggest inventory, and the best prices you'll find on firearms, ammo, and shooting accessories. No matter what you're looking for, Bud's is going to have it, and they'll have it at the best price you'll find. Bud's is the biggest gun store in Tennessee, nearly 50,000 square feet, and they have a state-of-the-art 25-lane shooting range. Bud's Gun Shop and Range is just 20 minutes from Knoxville at exit 407 in Sevierville. See for yourself why shooting enthusiasts from all over are making the short trip to Bud's. Bud's. Stop. Shop. Shoot.
I've been told that Black women aren't supposed to support the Second Amendment. I've been told I shouldn't want to be able to protect myself. I shouldn't teach my fellow students about their rights. And I shouldn't speak my mind. Thank God I didn't listen. To all of those who have called me a sellout, an Uncle Tom, or a pawn for someone else, here's what should scare you. I never changed my beliefs. I woke up and realized that you don't represent them. You don't speak for me, and you don't think for me. I am not the victim you need me to be. And I'm talking to more women like me every single day. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
You're listening to the Survival in Motion podcast with author Cal Wilson.
All right, we're joined today by Bob Main of the Handgun World podcast. Bob has been a gun owner since 2005, has run the Handgun World podcast for 8.5 years with hundreds of episodes under his belt. Nowadays, Bob owns many handguns, instructs on gun safety and defense, says he's an everyday guy, and also says he carries a gun because he cannot carry a cop. Is that right?
My theme is I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop.
Well, thanks, Bob, for joining me at the Survival in Motion podcast. Bob, earlier in the podcast, I discussed my own transition from anti to pro-gun, you know, because of a shooting at a law firm that I never thought I would have predicted. So as an attorney, I felt I needed a handgun to protect myself. Do you have a similar event that changed your opinion on guns and made you decide to arm yourself?
Well, when I was a kid, of course, I did a lot of hunting with my parents. Both my mom and my dad did a lot of hunting. That was all. I didn't have any experience with handguns when I was a youngster. Just a lot of shotgun and occasional rifle hunting when I was a kid. And it was 2005 that really got me started in this quite a bit, that really kind of woke me up. I had a kind of a close encounter with a bad guy, almost.
This was before you carried a gun, right?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't against guns. I just didn't give it much thought before then. It just wasn't something that I really thought that I needed to do until I needed to carry one. That's the way it is with a lot of people.
Yep, very true. So what happened to you during this incident in 2005?
In the summer of 2005, I travel a lot for my business, for the business I do. So I was in Houston, and I had got there late. I drove in from Dallas, and I was real late. It was like a little past midnight, and I check into my hotel. I unpack my things, and I realized that I forgot to pack socks, and I just have a thing where I don't want to wear socks 2 days in a row. So there was a Walmart about a quarter of a mile away from the hotel in Houston. So I drive over there. It's like almost 12:30 a.m. by this time. And I buy some socks. And as I'm leaving the Walmart, a very, how do I describe this? A very not so good looking individual, a guy walks up to me and he just looked like a bad guy. And he had his hands in his coat pocket. It was in the wintertime. It was relatively cool. And he started asking me for directions. And I just kept right on walking. My instincts took over and told me, you know, Bob, don't talk much to this guy. Just keep on walking. Well, my car was at least 100 yards away. So he had his hands in his pockets, and he kept pestering me. And he kept following me. And I kept trying to walk a little faster, and he'd follow me some more. And he'd keep asking me for directions and things like that. And I just said, I can't help you, sir. Well, after about 50 or 60 yards, he reaches out with his hand and he grabs my shoulder and he spins me around. So he made physical contact with me. And he said, hey, man, I am just trying to get your help. And I said, I understand that, but I can't help you. I said, I've got to go and I can't help you. Well, all of a sudden, he digs his right hand deeper into his pocket. And it looked to me like he was grabbing a knife out of his pocket or maybe a pocket gun. And I freaked out at this point, and I was getting pretty nervous. So I started making a dash for my vehicle, because by this time I was getting fairly close. 2 seconds later, Cal, the Walmart security guard shows up. You know those Walmart security guards that drive around in golf carts?
Oh, yeah. Good timing.
He shows up and he said, you know, is there a problem here? Well, that guy just dashed. I mean, he was gone once the Walmart security guy showed up. And so to this day, I think, you know what? I don't know what the man had in his pocket. I don't know what he was reaching for. I don't know if that was a gun. I don't know if it was a knife, if it was pepper spray. I had no idea what it was. But when I got back in my car and I drove back to my hotel at about 12:30 a.m., I said to myself, Bob, that's it. And the next day, I called up a place in Dallas, and I booked a concealed carry class.
Now that you've come out the other end, you know, a handgun instructor who owns many guns, and what advice would you give, say, the first-time gun buyer, the person who's just recently made the decision, kind of like what you did after the 2005 incident in that Walmart parking lot? What would you advise someone who has just recently decided that they need to be armed.
Well, the first thing I'd say is congratulations. I'm glad that you've made that decision. The next piece of advice I would give you is absolutely do not, under any circumstances, call up friends and relatives and ask them what you think you should do. Because, you know, you and I were talking a little bit before this podcast started, and you said you wanted me to kind of, you know, talk about what a person should do when they first consider carrying. Friends and relatives mean well. They absolutely mean well because they like you or they love you. But friends and relatives are typically going to recommend to you what they like and not necessarily what is the best firearm for you. Does that make sense?
Sure.
This is not like recommending a movie to somebody. Because if you go to a movie and you don't like it, what big deal? You're out, what, $15, $20? But if you go buy a gun that you don't like, you could be out several hundred or more, and you're just not going to use it. You're not going to carry about it. We're talking about life-saving tools here.
Well, all I can say is, oops. Sounds like I did exactly what you recommend not doing, but I don't know. It kind of worked out for me because in my case, asking a family member, in my case, my brother-in-law, for info was pretty informative.
Well, let me expand on what I was saying. The first thing I think you should do is find a local range in your area that has basic handgun classes and go to that. Before you even start talking to friends and relatives, go find an instructor, a neutral party that does local basic handgun, basic self-defense classes, and talk to that person. Talk to him or her that's teaching the class and say, okay, look, I've made my decision to get my concealed carry license, and that's why I want to sign up for the class, and start there. Once you've got a basic education like that, you know, then they'll start to point you into different directions that you should, you know, different classes to take, guns to buy, things like that. Does that make sense?
Yep. That's great advice.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with calling your brother-in-law. There's nothing wrong with calling your cousin, your brother, sister, mom, dad, and tell them that you've made the decision. The reason I don't like that is because oftentimes your relatives will try to talk you out of it.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, when the subject of guns comes up, for some reason, it's a sensitive subject like some of the others. And you might have friends and relatives who say, oh, don't do that. You don't need to get a gun. Come on. That's not good. You know, and I would hate to see somebody that's made the decision to finally carry for self-protection get talked out of it by somebody that they know.
Well, I guess in my case, my brother-in-law was not really like that. He was the opposite of discouraging. He encouraged me to buy all kinds of guns. He practically encouraged me to buy a whole arsenal and maybe even RPG on top of that. You know, well, I'm exaggerating, but that was what he was like. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Ideally, a first-time gun buyer should go to a class first and get their information there.
Find somebody neutral, take their class locally, and start there. I think that'd be a good place to start.
Would you recommend that the new gun person go to a shooting range?
Usually you can find basic handgun classes at shooting ranges. Yes, that's a good place to start. Also, get on the NRA's website because there are a lot of good NRA instructors out there that offer basic pistol classes, and sign up for a basic NRA pistol class.
You're also a licensed handgun instructor, right?
I'm an NRA instructor. I'm also licensed to teach the Texas License to Carry classes. And I've also been a defensive firearms instructor for a little over 5 years. And I can tell you that there are some pretty good instructors that are affiliated with the NRA. There's also some fairly good concealed carry instructors. But most of the NRA instructors are, in my opinion, a little bit more, they'll give you more self-defense advice than probably a licensed to carry instructor would.
All right. As I understand it, in most states, the laws are pretty accommodating for having a loaded gun in your home versus stricter laws that apply to carrying a loaded gun in public or in your car or something. Could you talk about the different laws in the various states regarding what is required, you know, to legally carry a concealed loaded gun in public, you know, CCW permits?
You know, when you make the decision to carry, depending on where you are, most states require that you get a license to carry. I think we now have about 13 or 14 what they call constitutional carry states, where as long as you're 21 and not a convicted felon, you can carry and you don't need to have a license. But the other 36 or 37 or so states require that you have a license or a permit.
Okay.
Now, among those that require a license, there are may issue states and there are shall issue states. A may issue state means that, well, the state may issue you a license, but it's really up to the discretion of the local sheriff or the police department or some politicians. A shall issue state, like where I live in Texas, means that as long as you meet the requirements, which means 21, not a convicted felon, you pass the background check, and you go to a 4 to 6 hour class, the state shall issue you. They must. They are obligated to issue you a concealed carry license. They cannot turn you down if you pass the class and pass the background check.
And do you know where people can go to find out which type of state their state is?
Yes, handgunlaw.us. Again, that's handgunlaw.us, not .com or .net, .us. Gary Slider's the owner and operator of it. He's been on my podcast a couple of times. I've interviewed him on the Handgun World podcast, which, by the way, you can find it on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, or you can just go to handgunworld, all one word, .com. But Gary's got a good website, handgunlaw.us. What you do is you go on there, you click your state. So if you live in Kansas, you go on the website, you click on the state of Kansas, and it'll tell you just about everything you want to know about getting your concealed carry license.
Thanks. That's great. I'll put that website in the show notes. Do you know of any other resources that are good at educating new gun people, not only on CCWs, but guns in general?
Podcasts like this, like yours, like mine. If you get on iTunes and just search handgun podcasts or gun podcasts, there are a lot of good ones out there. There are so many of them now. I mean, I wish I would have had this resource. And it's one of the reasons why I started podcasting, because I felt there was a void out there of good information. Now, within the past 8.5 years, there are tons of them. But I'm a member. My podcast is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network. If you go to selfdefenseradio.net, you'll see a list of all the good podcasts that we have on our network, and they're all good sources of information.
Thanks. What about the brands of guns or like bullet sizes? Are there any you'd recommend that the first-time gun buyer check out or avoid?
Oh, I love this question. Yes, actually, there are some guns I will recommend and some that I will urge a new shooter to stay away from. And I want to underscore new shooters. We have a lot of 9mm striker-fired semi-automatic small compact guns on the market. They're all good. That's where I would recommend that someone start. There are Glocks, Smith & Wessons, SIGs, Springfields, Rugers. Most of the major manufacturers make a good, inexpensive 9mm semi-auto. Don't let your brother-in-law say, well, you gotta have a 45, because if it's not a 45, you're not gonna be effective with it. That's just total garbage. I'm not saying a 45 is not any good. It's a fantastic gun, but for some people, they're difficult to shoot.
Well, it's a subjective personal preference thing. You know, whatever kind of gun a person feels most comfortable with in defending themselves, you know, for every gun owner, that's different.
Yeah. And you know what? Go to a range that rents guns. A lot of shooting ranges rent guns. And I've said this on my podcast before. Rent no less than 10 pistols. It's going to cost you $10 to $15 each to rent them. So that's going to run you $100 to $150. It'll save you hundreds of thousands, because you'll make the right choice if you rent 8 to 10 guns. Buy one box of ammo, which is usually 50 rounds, and go shoot them and rent them. That's, you know, try before you buy. We don't buy cars without test driving them. Don't buy a gun without test shooting it.
Very cool. Very cool. Thanks. Bob, do you have any thoughts on locked storage containers for guns? I've always felt that when a person buys a gun, they should also buy some container to lock it in, just for safety.
Yeah, sure. I have several what I call quick access safes. They're push button safes. I set the combination. Nobody knows the combination except me. And I can push the buttons and I can open it in 1 to 2 seconds. And when I'm at home, I store either all my guns in a real large safe, but the ones that I want to be able to access quickly, I use my quick access safes. There's one by my bed, there's one in my office, and of course, I'm always carrying a gun on my body, even when I'm at home.
What would one of these gun safes cost?
A good quick access safe is going to be $80 to $120.
I noticed there are some biometric gun safes on the market now. You know, a gun safe that locks up your gun and then opens up only when it checks on your fingerprints and stuff like that. Have you had any encounters with biometric gun safes?
I don't own any, but I hear they're pretty good. Gun Vault is a good brand that I recommend. I have three Gun Vault quick access safes. They're not biometric. They're just push button.
Okay, so Bob, what are you packing nowadays?
As I sit here in front of my mic talking to you, I have on my body a Glock 43 9mm, which is a small, compact gun, and I've got a quick access gun vault safe in my office with a Smith & Wesson M&P pistol inside of it, 9mm.
Yeah, I have a Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm, and I'm pretty happy with it.
That's a wonderful gun. That's one of my top three recommendations, especially for new shooters. Smith & Wesson M&P Shield in 9mm. I don't care for the 40 caliber version. They do make a 45 version. I don't know if I would encourage a new shooter to start with that, but the Shield 9mm are wonderful.
I like having 9mm guns because lately it seems that whenever there's a run on ammo, the 9mm bullets are still available when most everything else is sold out.
You're right. These days, ammunition technology has gotten so good that there's not a real big difference now between 9, 40, and 45. I encourage people to, especially new shooters and new carriers, get the 9mm. It's cheaper to practice, it's easy to handle, and it's very effective.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, Bob, I sure appreciate your time coming out here on the Survival in Motion podcast and answering all my questions about, you know, what a first-time gun buyer should know. What else can you tell our listeners about how to stay up to date with you and your podcast?
Well, handgunworld.com, Handgun World Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, just about any place that hosts podcasts, you'll find me if you just search Handgun World. My show starting next month is going to be twice a month on the 1st and 15th of every month. Right now, it's every week, but I'm going to be switching to every 2 weeks. And I put out shows pretty regularly. I do a lot of interviews, and I also have a lot of people that submit material for me to play on my podcast. And it's a lot of them are law enforcement, a lot of them are instructors, a lot of them are just everyday people like me.
Thanks again, Bob. This was great. I'll post in the show notes all the websites you mentioned.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. There's a few things I'd like to add. A gun can obviously be dangerous. So if you know nothing about guns or you've never shot a gun before, you should talk to a gun instructor, you know, licensed in your area, or get together with a gun instructor from the NRA website before you rent or shoot a gun. And let me give some quick non-exclusive gun safety rules. That means there are other gun safety rules out there, but this is a start. Always treat a gun as if it's loaded and ready to shoot. And always point a gun in a safe direction, usually straight up or down. Never put your finger on the trigger unless and until you're ready to shoot the gun. When you do shoot a gun, always be aware of what you might hit nearby or what might be on the other end of what you're shooting at. As an example, shooting at a deer that's on top of a hill. If you hit the deer, the bullet might go right through it. Or if you miss the deer, I don't know. The bullet could go past the deer and land on a house on the other side of the hill. So keep that in mind. Don't shoot at stuff that if you miss it or if it goes through, it'll hit somebody or a house or whatever. Never look down the barrel of a gun and never joke around using a gun. In my opinion, it's a good idea to have a healthy sense of respect for all guns. Take them all very seriously and be very careful with guns. Thanks again to Bob Main of the Handgun World Podcast for joining us here today. And I hope you found this podcast informative and educational. I hear the music, so that means our time is up. Thanks for joining me. God bless.